The sun was sinking into the west as Jorski led Dennis and Kale to the Gravis Mausoleum. The structure was made of grey stone, unadorned except for a bas-relief of an angel on the door, her hands extended in supplication to heaven. Jorski fumbled with the key ring.
"We don't need a key," Dennis said, pushing open the mausoleum door. "The lock is broken."
Kale unsheathed his sword and followed Dennis inside the crypt. In the back of the mausoleum sat three tombs, and as Kale drew near, he could see the lid on the tomb to his left had been slid back. Jorski walked up behind him.
"This is where Lady Eleanor was laid to rest," Jorski said, looking into the empty tomb, and for a moment the three men stood in silence.
Kale could never get used to that peculiar horror of the empty casket. Legrand had said it best. It was a corruption of the Christian promise of everlasting life.
Darkness had already fallen by the time they returned to the manor, where Legrand was interviewing the servants in the dining hall. Dennis and Kale agreed to keep watch outside the house, while Legrand would remain within. Less than an hour later, Dennis was on the roof of the manor, his hunting bow slung over his back, while Kale moved into the western forest, where Eleanor had fled after her encounter with Jorski. Kale climbed an old elm which stood just southwest of the estate. The first two nights passed without event, and the Malachi enjoyed the lady's hospitality. She kept a wonderful table, and with a dairy on the grounds, the brothers were plied daily with fresh milk and cheese, which Dennis referred to as white meat, to the consternation of Legrand.
On the third night, Kale moved deeper into the woods, where he climbed a twisted birch and resigned himself to another long watch. He had slept intermittently that morning, and took a short nap after dinner, yet he still felt tired, and his entire body seemed heavy and dull. Night was falling, the western horizon colouring violet, and Kale gazed at Gravis Manor, the parlour window revealing the faint glow of the fireplace. An autumn chill was in the air, and Kale shifted his crossbow and tightened his cloak. The light failed and the forest darkened, and Kale rested on a forked limb, gazing into the woods and marking every sound, trying to identify its source: a rabbit scurrying through the underbrush, a nightingale's call. To fight boredom, he tried to identify all of the outbuildings that lay upon the grounds. He marked the shadowy outline of the dovecot, and just east of it stood the stone dairy. There someone, perhaps Victor, exited with an oil lamp swinging from his hand, throwing a pendulum of light into the gloom, and Kale stared in quiet fascination. It was like this on a watch, where the mundane often became extraordinary. The hours of early evening passed, the forest silent. Kale shifted in the tree and gazed up at a brilliant cluster of stars. Directly overhead was Cassiopeia, queen of the autumn sky, glittering in the heavens. Her open arms yearned for Perseus, now rising in the east. Kale's mind began to wander, and he tried to picture the young Eleanor Gravis had she been beautiful, like her mother. He imagined her so. He had a mental image of the two of them living gracefully within the stone mansion. What had happened to the Lord Gravis? He wanted to ask the lady at breakfast, but found it impossible without sounding intrusive. Legrand would surely find out. The moon rose, waxing nearly full when an owl screeched and took flight. The sound momentarily unnerved Kale, and he thought of his gypsy grandmother, who possessed the dark gift of clairvoyance.
"Where owls cry, sorrow follows," she used to say.
He tried to track the owl, watching the trees around him while waiting for its second call. As he turned towards the depths of the forest, he froze, sensing movement on the ground. Curls of fog rose from the forest floor, from which emerged a woman in white. She moved without effort, as if floating over a vast ocean. Her gown was easy to mark in the gloom, for she was less than 100 feet away, and Kale slowly raised his crossbow, centering it on her breast. He then realized, to his astonishment, that he had failed to load a bolt. He now stared at his weapon, dumbfounded. The crossbow wasn't an easy weapon to load, more difficult in a tree. Suppressing a rising tide of panic, he pointed the weapon down, bracing his foot against the bow to gain leverage. He snapped off his belt hook, crouching low as he slipped the hook over the bowstring. The Nosferatu was now down on all fours, sniffing the air, her head turning from side to side. "She's picking up my scent." His blood ran cold. She was 40 feet away and closing. He leaned back slowly, pulling the bowstring taut, waiting for the string to catch. He could sense her approach, and dared not look at her. As he struggled against the pressure of the bowstring, he felt her eyes upon him, and would not meet her gaze, for he knew how her eyes would burn in that dark wood, mesmerizing and seductive, filled with malice and bloodlust. He could hear her now, panting under his tree as she began to climb, her nails digging into the bark of the trunk. She was mewling, smelling his blood as she climbed, and he could smell her now, the reek of the dead, the stench of the grave. Leaning back, he felt the bowstring catch the load point. Dear God, steady my hand. She pulled herself up, even with him, eyes wide and grinning. He squeezed the trigger as she lunged to embrace him, and the bolt ripped through her chest, throwing her from the tree, sending her airborne into darkness.
She was falling, and at first she thought she was flying. Leaves swirled around her, and birds flew from silent perches. She hit the forest floor with a sudden shock, and everything was still. She drew in a breath, and the pain nearly blinded her. She dared not move, lying on her back, shuddering in pain and fear. She lost consciousness for a moment, then woke to a dreadful sound, a footstep in the darkness, then another. She sensed a shadow in the forest, closing on her, and looked up with hate and terror. It was a young gypsy priest, sword in hand, and she watched him kiss the vile thing, the crucifix that swung from his neck. She understood, at her moment of death, that this warrior priest had set a trap for her. He stood over her, his dark eyes merciless, the eyes of a soldier, the eyes of a killer. She tried to scream but could not. He pulled her up by the hair into a sitting position, and another silent scream passed her lips. She saw the treetops above her, the moon and the stars. She felt cold steel on her throat, and then she was no more.